And Joe said, well, maybe you ought to put in a new bulb. Well, for gosh sakes, he said, you mean that's all there is to it? He said, well, it's a wonderful invention, but gee, I don't want to be without it. Joe had quite a time explaining to him. He had to screw one out and screw another one in. Cause, yeah, that was how new it was to him, you know. Yeah, the same guy, his son, he had a Model T Ford he used to drive around, and his son bought a Model A Ford, and he got him to pick it up down in Warren and drive it up onto the hill. So he rode on the running board and told him how to shift it. Well, he got it into second gear, and of course, by that time, he was going just about as fast as son wanted to stay aboard, so he bailed off. He got it up to the house, and he forgot. He never did shift it, and he went up through Warren Village in second gear, really humming. He got it up to the house, and he wanted to stop it, and he couldn't remember how to stop it. So he went around the barn 2-3 times and finally ran it into the bank and got it stopped. Oh, he said that thing had the most power of anything he ever saw. That was quite a change, too, from the Model T to the cars we got today.
The other thing I should ask you about, too, was the telephone, because that, I guess all kinds of communication, but that again...
Oh, yeah, we had the old party lines. It could be 6 or 8 people on it, and you went by the number of dingles. Somebody might have 4 shorts, and somebody might have a long and 2-3 shorts, and when I married my wife, she was a telephone operator down in Waitsfield Village here, and she used to sit there at the switchboard, and she'd push this little plug in a hole, and then she'd pull a lever, and she'd, and then if they had a fire, she'd put in a whole bunch of those plugs, and then she'd ring, I forget what the signal was, but I think it was she'd ring 3 short rings 3 times, and then she'd come on the phone and tell where the fire was, and everybody'd take off and go and help fight the fire. But they used to get those lines tied up, and once in a while somebody get a little nosy, and you could hear them breathing on the other side of the phone. it was better than nothing. I mean, you step up there and take your receiver off and wind that old crank, and then the operator'd come on. You'd tell her what number she want, and she'd plug in that switch and tweet, 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 you know. And, yeah, it was a lot better than nothing, that's for sure. And, well, that, of course, came in. We had telephone up on West Hill long before we had electricity. Yeah, in fact, Mr. Chase and I used to go down in the woods and get out telephone poles for Mr. Fire here in Waitsfield to go around and put up. So, yeah, all I had was 1 string of wire, I think it was, on the knobs there. They run for miles. She'd come down across it, but they got around. They didn't have 6 or 8 trucks to service it, you know. One old truck, and he'd usually get to it for the week was out. It might be a couple of days, but that was the only communications we really had. And the radios, we had an old Atwater Kent, I remember. We had to have a bunch of B batches and a car battery to run it. When the old B battery got flat and we didn't have money enough to buy another one, we had to wait a while sometimes. But I know it was a lot of fun to listen to Amos and Andy, and that was an old Burns there, and it was it? And what had a sister by the name of Mary, I think it was. George Burns and Mary there, they used to get on the air. That Amos and Andy was quite a favorite for most everybody back then. Back when I was a kid living up in Waitsfield there, when I first went to live with my folks, it must have been around 1923, my uncle took in a young lad that had a little problem. Nobody seemed to want to take him in, but he'd, somewhere or other, he'd studied radio. And I remember just before Christmas, he got me, I had a lot of Bart's director set. We used to take these Quaker oatmeal, round Quaker oatmeal boxes, and wind wire around them and make radios, make those one tube or two tube radios. And my uncle bought four sets of headphones. And they spent all one afternoon going up this 35-foot silo to get a wire about 100 feet long from that top of that silo over to the house so they have antenna enough to get it. And I remember we sat down Christmas Eve, and he fired this thing up and run it on these round batches. And he fired it up, and old squeal, you know, the headphones almost come off your head, and it let out a tweet and a squeal and a hum, and finally he'd get these three dials adjusted. And I never forget, NBC was the one we was listening to that night, and they, you know, they had the same call letters they got now, ping, bong, 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 and I never forgot it. That was way back in 23, and not too long ago I heard that same thing come over the air. That I think was about the most interesting thing in my childhood. I mean, that really set me going. I guess that's why I got interested in television. But we had a lot of fun making the doggone thing, you know. He'd get pieces of wire wandered around these boxes, and then he'd get another box and put it inside, and that made a variable condenser, and that's the way we had three of those going. Put it through this doggone tube, and it was quite plain. Once in a while, we'd lose it, and it'd fade away, and then it'd come back, and then it'd squeal, and had to readjust these things again. But a lot of people came to our house to listen to it. And then a little while after that, I used to go down to the telephone office, and Mr. Farr had built himself a bigger one, so he used to go in there and listen to that one. It was fun. But some change against what they got nowadays.
Well, I think we just about covered everything. I was going to look at my
notes. We must have.
I think the only thing I didn't ask you about that I have written down are Jack Jumpers and McCullough Turnpike. Did you used to ride Jack Jumpers at all?
I used to ride them, but not up there, no. No, I had a gas cart mounted on a pair of head skis, and I'd lay a tank down on top of that, because my gosh, the snow was 4 feet deep, and you couldn't drag one of them 200-pound cylinders through the deep snow. It couldn't go quite the bottom. So a friend of mine gave me a pair of head skis that had taken a little bit of a beating, and I mounted the gas sled on, and they'd come right along on top. So when I go up to the T-bar on the mountain, I had to put the tanks on these heating shanties up on the line. So I'd throw the rope around the T-bar and jump onto the tank and ride it up. When I got ready to come back, I put the empty tank on, turn it around, jump on, and come down. I could even beat some of the skiers. It was kind of hard on the boots. I didn't wear five-buckle overshoes, I'm telling you. I had to have heavier boots, but I could land it all right. It was a lot of fun. How the skiers would laugh when I go sailing down through there, you know. No, I did as a kid. I my wife is, I'm sure that she had a homemade jumper made out of a barrel stave, and we used to beat one together and get on it. It was pretty good on those things. But didn't have the skis back then, or if they had them, we didn't have them. We made our own jumpers, or got our folks to make them for us. You could take a barrel stave, an oak barrel stave, and brace it up, and it'd give you a wild ride in March, and there's a good crust. You'd go right over the top of the barbed wire fences, and make jumps and go in the air with them. You know, it's kind of hard on the anatomy when you landed, but it was fun. We had to make our own fun in those days. I mean, the kids don't know what a good time is really today, I don't think. They got so many sports, I don't think they have time to learn to read and write. They spend all their time in sports. I heard one woman the other day telling all the things that her kid was going to do, and she wasn't sure she was going to even have time to get meals. She was toting her kid here and toting her kid there. First they had skiing lessons, then skating lessons, and then I guess I had to go and play basketball somewhere. And, well, it sounded like a busy life to me. She asked the kid if he got his homework done. Said, yeah, he did that between something. I forget what it was. We didn't have any problem getting time to do our homework. We had all kinds of it. But we had time for fun, too. We didn't know anything different, so I guess we were happy. I know I wasn't very happy when Thanksgiving Day come along and we'd have to put the old Chevrolet up because you couldn't get on off the hill, and then the mud got so deep we couldn't run it. Well, we didn't usually register it till the first or middle of May. So I used to get kind of sick of that. I've done an awful lot of walking and a lot of tobogganing. Yeah, now they got a blacktop road to keep it plowed. I go up through there in high gear. Remember the old Model B Ford? We made it in second gear. We thought it was really doing something. Now I take my Buick and slide up there 40 miles an hour and it don't nothing to it. I guess that's an improvement. I mow the golf course over next, and that's another thing. I worked for two summers now, running the big 7-gang mower to mow the golf course. Years ago when I was a kid, I used to cut corn on that same area. There's two farms there, and our neighbor's farm and that neighbor's farm is all golf course now. I like to go up there and work because it brings back old days, but what a difference. I mean, even that mowing machine is better conveyance than I had this when I was younger. Yeah, a lot of people come up there. Golf is really going over big. They come from all over heck up there. But it's better than sitting down. You know, you can't retire. There's no fun in retiring. You get used to working 6 days a week, and then you sit down and you just go to pieces. I don't know how much longer they'll hire me. I'll be 77 this fall, so whether they'll the young lad I work for, the first summer I worked there, they didn't have portable radios enough to go around. So I said, well, I don't need a radio. And he used to say, well, if you get a pain anywhere, Alden, you get back to the clubhouse just fast you can. And I said, hey, Mike, don't worry about me. If I have a pain, I'll make sure I get back and punch the timer out. I'll do whatever I'm going to do on my time, so don't worry about it. It kind of didn't sputter a little bit. He said, you and your stinking sense of humor, it ain't funny. The last summer, he insisted I carry the radio. My gosh, these even these handheld radios. And confounded homemade contraptions, those great long boxes. Now they got one you can put in your hip pocket. I mean, they're really good. I mean, fire departments can certainly go to town. They'd be handicapped without them. And so there's been a lot of improvements that's been darn good, but most of them came out of World War II. That's a sad part of it. Too bad they have to have a war to come out with all these four-wheel drives and two-way radios and all that stuff. But, well, at least we got something good out of it.
One last story I was going to ask you. I hope I'll go to see your cousin. I haven't called her yet. But
I don't think you'll see her because she's pretty sick of the...
Oh, she...
Oh, she's got a hell of a cold.
Oh, not... I'll call her in a month or so.
Oh, she ought to be over it, but that if she isn't, they'll bury her.
No,
she's got it pretty bad, I guess.
I was going to ask you, and I'm going to ask Jack the same thing, that wonderful story about the car that went into the ditch, and he...
Pushed it back in again.
Yeah.
Oh, he gets a big kick out of telling that one. Yeah.
One of the things, if I can get a couple of different people to tell it, you can sometimes get voices going back and forth. So I thought I'd ask you, knowing you knew it.
Oh, yeah. I remember when he was telling about it when it happened. Yeah. He pulled him out, and then he didn't want to pay, so he pushed him right back in again.
But spit it out a little more. I mean... The way it happened.
Well, I don't know too many of the details. It seems that he'd put up this, I forget what they called the doggone thing. It was some kind of a snow plow.
What a something Magen, a
Yeah, he had a special name for it, trade name. But it would go anywhere, I guess. And he run it all the time plowing. He just put it up in the garage, and this guy had slobbered off out in there and got himself stuck. And he asked him if he'd go and pull him out, and he said yes, he would. So he went over and pulled him out, and when he went down and hits the chain, he asked him how much he owed him, and I guess he told him I guess he got smart to him or something. I never got all the details, but I do remember that Jack's disposition got a little heft up, and he just put the blade right against him, pushed him back in, unhitched the chain, and went home. He went over to the office and jumped the boss about it. And boss said, you know, that isn't our business. They got a garage down here that makes a... We was just trying to be accommodating or something. And I never got quite all the detail. The only thing I ever really got verified was the fact he pushed him back in again. I heard that so many times, I know he did it all right.
The story I heard was that he, before all that happened, I guess I've forgotten who was his boss, but had said, you know, what, we're not in the business of pulling people out, charge them something.
Yeah.
And he charged him $5 or something, and the guy wouldn't pay it, so he pushed him back in, and then the garage came and charged him $25 or something.
Yeah, they finally had to get him. Well, you know, and I drove shuttle bus up to Sugar Bush Inn for three winters. And one morning I remember they had a Mercedes there that wouldn't start, and they had a colored boy that worked for the outfit, and he would go out and start cars once in a while. So I was pretty busy, and so I said to him, why don't you go out and start that Mercedes, and I'll go over and get the Canadian with the Chrysler over here at one of the condos. So I went over, and I had a heck of a time getting that thing. It was flooded, and I ground and ground and ground, and finally got him started. And he said, how much do I owe you? And I said, well, whatever's worth to you. So he gave me a couple of dollars. So I probably burned $2 worth of gas grinding him to get him going. Well, and I came back over, and I said to the colored boy, well, how was your morning? By gosh, he said, good. It took me about 3 minutes, and the guy gave me $20. I said, how are you going to send no more business to you? So that was probably where the guy came out that had to pay the $25 for the wrecker. No, it's... when it can be brutal on the cars. Although these newer cars, they don't have... Gosh, I can remember when... one winter I was unemployed, and I went to work up Bonnet's garage to help out. Mr. Bonnet was a good buddy of mine. He was sure to help. We went out 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and 3 o'clock the next morning we were still starting cars around. Oh, it was bitter cold. Well, we wouldn't have been so bad, but we had a flat tire on the wreck and we didn't have a spare tire. So we had to get Mr. Bonnet out of bed and go hunt up his spare tire and come up to help us get so we could get home. Well, that was a terrible night. But we started cars everywhere. They were stuck, oh my gosh, and they wouldn't start off the road. And boy, that was a wild night.
Well, I think you've done it up brown. That was
kinds
of things.
I hope I filled the bill.
You certainly did.
My boy said, I hope you tell the same story twice the same. Well, I tried.
Almost word for word.
Few things I can remember, but I'm getting some names. I never was any good. I bought a piece of property where the gas plant is. After I sold the business, the big guy came up from down country, and I bought this piece of land, and he thought, my gosh, he bought all that land for $1,500. Boy, I got to meet up with the guy he bought it from. He must be some kind of a nut, you know? So I got to the guy's house, and started to introduce him. I couldn't remember the boss's name. He said, well, you're going to make one heck of a good manager. I can see that. You don't even know what your boss's name is. Well, I said, I guess it don't much matter. I know what the company name is, and that's why my checks are made out. He said, you don't care who signs them. I said, no, not so long as they're cashable. But he thought that was something, because he come up from down country, and I was going to take over as business manager, and I couldn't even, didn't even know my boss's name. Well, I'd only met him once before, you know. And, I got to know him pretty well for the 3 years. But, you know, I think he actually liked me. I used to have to go down to Westfield, Massachusetts once a month to a business meeting. And we'd get in the office, and he'd line everybody out, you know. Oh, he'd give them all heck for something. But he never lay on to me, and the boys used to say, one of these days he's going to open up on you. You wait and see. So that's the way he is. But you know that guy, he never chewed me out. And it wasn't because I'm sure I must have committed as many crimes as the others because, well, I couldn't see they'd done anything very bad. But he liked that. But I never forget the time that I was supposed to introduce him to the gentleman down here we bought the land from. I guess he figured we were both nuts. Well, I suppose down in Massachusetts you wouldn't buy an acre and a half of land for, and the best part of it was they called up one day and they said the fire marshal insists you've got to have 10 gallons of water a minute. I said, where the heck are you going? Well, he said, I understood when you bought it, the guy that owned it said there was an old well on the land. So you don't average to get 10 gallons a minute out of an old well. And, well, he said, I want you to get water somewhere there. Well, gee, that summer it was drier than, oh, my God, just like a desert around. So I got Fred Armstrong over next door. He'd take a couple of welding rods, and if there was one puddle of water, he'd find it. He went over there, and we couldn't find that old well, but, boy, we found a stream of water that, well, I guess it turned out to be about 20 gallons a minute. And I said, my gosh, if I'd bought this land, it'd cost me $1,000 to even drill a well to get a gallon a minute. And this, they got all kinds of, what, gee. Now, I didn't get any bonus for that one, but and they, all we had to do was just put a tank down there and put a bunch of stone around it, and we had water enough to fight any fire we wanted to around there. It was just plain luck. People don't believe in these dowsers no more, but it worked out here. I got a spring just 5 feet from the edge of the house, and my son-in-law found for me. Yeah, I never could figure out how they found these gold mines and all these things out west. But this old Bill Hart that taught me television, he said, well, you've heard of dowsers, haven't you? And he said, you think it's the water that attracts their rods, but it isn't. He said, it's the metal in the water. And he was right. That's the way they found them. I later, after I read more, I found out that was the case. A lot of crazy things in this world if you only could be smart enough to know all about them.
Well, I sure thank you. I think there's one other thing that they like to do, and that is they get a minute or 2 minutes of room tone, which makes it easier to edit. So we have to sit here.
So just have to sit.
Without heavy breathing.
Quietly for just about half a minute.
I think I can hold my breath that long.
I can't.
Okay, this is Alden Bettis room tone. That's the end of the room, Tom.
Guess we're off the air, right?
We're off the air. Right. And what they'll do is just